Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5 brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips haircut app and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Who was the biggest loser in the NBA draft lottery? The Bulls, the Suns, the Cavs, Zion Williamson, or the NBA?
I don't know why I love that question, but it really is. It's fun to contemplate. I got to be honest with you. I think the biggest loser is the NBA. I think the NBA wants super teams on the coast. I think they want New York to come back. I don't know how this will play out. There's reports. The NBA is a rumor league, and there's reports all over the place that Durant to the Knicks is already a done deal, that's happening. Maybe Kyrie joins them. Maybe Kyrie goes back to LeBron. There's rumors every day. Take your pick. But the Bulls were a loser. The Suns and the Cavs obviously were losers. Zion Williamson has got to be gutted that he looked like he felt like a loser. But I think the big loser is the NBA, because I get what they did. They put new rules in and flattened out the odds in order to prevent teams from tanking, and it was something they almost had to do. But in their heart of hearts, it would have been best for them, for the league, if the Knicks had gotten the number one pick, if somehow the Lakers had defied the odds and gotten the number one pick, even if the team that was slated to pick seventh, New Orleans, had stayed there and the Bulls had gotten the number one pick. They would want that kid in a major market, and instead he goes to the anonymity of New Orleans. And don't forget, Memphis has the second pick. And now you're taking another really good, potential, great NBA player in Ja Morant, and you're sticking him in Memphis, where, again, there's just very little enthusiasm. If the league could control star placement, this would not be what they wanted. And it's as simple as that. So I think the league's the loser.
Probably true. I mean, New York and L.A., obviously where you want your biggest stars if you're the league. But I would look at it, take a step back and say, if I'm the commissioner and I'm Adam Silver and I've made all these changes to this process, I look at this as a win. And I think that when you look at why you changed the draft lottery, you did it because you're sick of tanking and you wanted to do something to discourage teams from tanking. So the biggest losers are the Suns and the Cavs. They were the teams that came the closest to orchestrated losing last year, and they're picking 5th and 6th. The Cavs are at 5, and I think Phoenix is at 6, and that got nothing for their orchestrated losing efforts. And I think that, to me, is progress, because you don't want teams, as Pax referred to last night, 20 games in, deciding, okay, we're done. This is it. This is the end of the season. And all those guys, people telling me, and all the newsprint and ink wasted, and all the airtime wasted about, well, was that a good win last night for the Bulls? Was that a bad victory? Was it bad that they won a game because they increased their percentages 1.5%? Give me a break. Tanking is dead. And I think last night you saw why the Pelicans had a 6% chance of getting the number one overall pick. They got the number one overall pick. The Grizzlies had a 6.3% chance. They're picking 2nd. So the Suns and the Cavs, to me, are the biggest losers, because all of the efforts that they made to have a terrible season to put themselves in position to get Zion were for nothing.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, NBA. And I'm not 100% sure that this stops the tanking, because it happened this one year. And David, you're dead on with New Orleans 6%, Memphis 6%. The Lakers had a 2.8% chance to get that number one pick, and that's exactly where they land. Conspiracy theory, thank God that the Lakers didn't get Zion, because everybody would be going off. But that would have been great business for the NBA. So you flatten out the odds, and you have New Orleans and Memphis on top. So for those that believe it's a two-player draft, now if you're adding two stars to this league out of college, they're going to the Western Conference too. So I don't know if that is ideal. I have a chance to say the Bulls are losers. I'm going to say they're losers, but we already knew that. Isn't it exclusive to last night? I couldn't care less about Phoenix or Cleveland, to be quite honest. A great man, Joakim Noah, once asked Mr. David, what's so great about Cleveland? So I would say that the biggest loser from last night is the NBA.
Well, I will say that hopefully we can put to rest all the talk about conspiracies and cold envelopes and the league placing superstars where they want them to be placed, because I think last night put an end to that talk for now, at least, because like you said, Molly, with your anti New Orleans agenda this morning, it's not exactly a hot market. It's not exactly a draw nationally or within even the Western Conference, and they're going to have Zion Williamson, the Memphis Grizzlies, who are even more of an irrelevant franchise and even worse city than New Orleans, are going to have the second best player in the draft. So one thing that I did enjoy about that was it was kind of a backhand back to all the people who thought that they were fixing this thing. But I think the biggest losers here are the Bulls, perennially, as long as this front office is in place. They're going to be losers. The Knicks were huge losers. I mean, they committed everything to getting one of the top picks in this draft, and they fell a lot further down than I think everybody thought that they would. And Phoenix, who statistically were the biggest losers here, even after getting the number one pick last year, so you can't feel too much sympathy for them, but they didn't make out very well at all. I don't think that Zion Williamson is a loser here. He's still going to get a huge contract. He's still going to get a huge shoe contract, no matter what city he's playing in. They're going to put a ton of Pelicans games on national television next season. He's going to be able to be seen. He's going to be able to be a star. No matter where he's playing, I think he's going to be just fine.
I think fans should be included. Bulls fans should be included. I'm going to echo what Joe said. I give a rat's rear end about the Suns or the Cavaliers. Zion Williamson's going to be just fine, but just to counter Kevin, which is just part of like breathing for me, you know, Zion's shoe contract won't be as worth as much in New Orleans as it would have been in New York or Chicago, for sure. It will not be. It'll be plenty. We figure out how to keep ComEd and NICOR on with that kind of money, but it's not going to be the same kind of money. It's not going to be extra generational wealth, okay? The NBA is going to be just fine. And my guy, Timmy B, Tim Brando, I had to retweet this. So to all my media friends crying in their wine glasses because Zion's not coming to New York or L.A., but the dreaded small market of New Orleans, a friendly reminder, your audience is everywhere, just not near a major body of waters. Stars can and should play everywhere. Amen. I mean, fine. Go. There's no problem going as. Listen, Anthony Davis, if he wants to go to one of the coasts and get out, okay, Zion Williamson and the Pelicans will be just fine. They'll probably be better off without AD and his unibrow.
That's a good question.
That's so ridiculous. Where does the Bulls getting the seventh pick leave you in terms of expectations for next season and your philosophy on tanking?
We feel terrible because the expectations were you're going to get possibly the number one overall pick, if not number two, and you were going to get a guy that was going to change the direction of your franchise. And that was what we built the excitement around the last several months, and that's why yesterday felt like such a letdown. That said, it's still going to maintain what we talked about going into the last night, is that, you know, the Bulls are going to get a decent player at seven. The problem with this is that it continues the focus on team building and chemistry and coaching and everything that's so easy to criticize about the Bulls. It keeps the focus on the front office and their ability to evaluate talent and draft the right person and sign the right free agent. That's a bad thing because the fan base is so fed up and so frustrated. And I don't know that the natives have ever been more restless about Bulls basketball than they are right now. So that is the challenge. But I think that health is the biggest concern if you're the Bulls, because if they stay healthy with their guys that they have right now under contract with the previous number seven overall draft picks and Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. and then Otto Porter Jr. and Zach LaVine, that's a pretty good core four. And you add somebody like that to the mix, you're going to be more competitive. You're going to be improved. You're going to challenge probably for the outer fringe of a playoff spot. You could flirt with 500. It's a big jump, but you still have to make that the goal. You still have to make that the realistic objective for next season. So in terms of expectations, they are you're devastated this morning if you're a Bulls fan because you wanted Zion Williamson, you wanted Ja Morant, and you wanted a new direction. And it still feels like more of the same cynicism is more of the same sort of disappointment surrounding this franchise. But realistically, you have to look at it, okay, you add somebody to the mix and you will be more competitive. And they could actually be fun to watch if you get the right free agent. The other asterisk about this is that Pac sounded willing to trade the pick. And you wonder, who would they get in return? What kind of veteran would be able to contribute immediately? So if you have an open mind about the Bulls ahead in the next season, you can see possibilities for improvement. But I just don't know how dramatic it will be now that they won't get one of the top two picks.
My expectations are the Bulls are going to be in the 2020 lottery. That's my expectation. I've never seen this core play together, so I don't have like a lot of high hopes that all these guys are going to somehow click together and it's going to happen. Pax might want to trade the number 7 pick, but does it have any value? How much value does it have? Is there a player sitting? The NBA draft is a lot different than any other draft. You can find good players throughout the draft, but you can also, it's very difficult to project these things, and people aren't desperate to get a lot of draft picks. They're desperate to get the top player or the top players. So I don't know what kind of trade you can pull off with a number 7 pick. It's not a premier pick, unfortunately. It's a 2-player draft or a 3-player draft or a 4-player draft, and you're picking 7th. So it's 2020 lottery. Here we come. My philosophy on tanking, I've never liked tanking, and Theo Epstein ruined sports, and now the league has kind of tried to bounce back a little bit. But no, it's not a good thing to tank.
This 7th pick doesn't do anything in terms of my expectations for next year. As an organization, I believe that they're hoping for 500, and they're hoping that they could sell a round of playoff tickets, and they're not going to be there. They're going to be back in the lottery. And not that they would land a big free agent, but they can't sign one anyways, and Boylan is still the head coach. As far as the draft goes with the 7th pick, I expect them to draft a high-floor, big-school guy like they usually do. Maybe they'll look at a DeAndre Hunter as a possibility. And as far as tankings, it really felt like the NBA gods just slapped the Bulls. After 2 years of trying to lose. Okay, with the old system, you get the 7th pick. All right, we're going to change things up. New system, you're going to get the 7th pick again. Just they really don't have the ability to add that impact player at the very top of the draft. I still think teams will tank moving forward. It'll probably affect the teams that are in the middle, right? So we talk about the very bottom because that's where the Bulls are at. The team's fighting for those extra percentage points, 14 versus 12.5 versus 10%, all that stuff. But it might have hit those teams in the middle. Okay, do we want to go one round in the playoffs and get swept? Or do we have a real shot here at getting a perennial all-star?
Wow, so you think more tanking?
Pause in the middle.
Huh. Hmm. Yeah.
Because Memphis had 16 more wins than the Knicks last year, and now they're getting Zion Williamson. So make unintended consequences? Possibly moving forward. I don't think tanking's dead because just in sports, you guys talk about this all the time. There's this idea is, are we going to win a championship or not? Because if we're not going to win a title, if we don't have a really real shot, let's lose as much as possible.
NBA purgatory just got more crowded.
You know, Joe, you bring up the fact that the Bulls and this regime in particular, they have a specific player that they like that did go to a big school that has a high ceiling that is, it's got a big wingspan and all of these other things. And that fills me with so much fear that they're going to select Cam Reddish with the 7th pick because he was so dreadful last year at Duke. And he's nothing but potential and athleticism and length and a player they think that they can mold. And I don't think they're going to have a shot at Garland or Hunter or Culver. I think that's even beyond them now at this point. In the 7th pick, I think they're going to have to take either Kobe White. Does that
maybe
do anything for you? I mean, that would be
North Carolina point guard.
Yeah, I mean, they could use a point guard, certainly. That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But Cam Reddish seems such like a player that they would take, doesn't it?
Well, sports marketing execs would love that. Great for the ad campaign.
And which ad campaign is
C. Reddish.
Right. run with the Bulls back into the draft lottery again next season. Because, Molly, I'm with you. I think that's probably going to where they're probably going to end up again next season. You could look at the conference finals this year, and you can look at where the best players that are still available have been drafted within that, 6 to 15 range. I don't think the Bulls have shown any ability to pick those diamonds out of the rough, so to speak. The only good draft picks they've ever made were usually in, that number one pick or so. So this is just a real gut punch, and maybe even further of a punch down below the belt, because this one really stung. This was basically the worst case scenario, and boy, I can't wait to hear what Pac says. 8 o'clock this morning.
Boy, last night I wasn't thinking the way you were, Mully, at least what you said there to start this off. We can go back to later on. We'll go back and get into it, you and I, about Theo Epstein ruining sports. But
I'm just saying that tanking.
Yeah, he ruined sports.
It was a joke about tanking.
It was terrible for baseball in the city of Chicago to get a World Series.
I thought it was.
Awful. Yeah, okay, you and the four people go back over.
Well, it was in retrospect, it did encourage other teams to try to lose, right?
Every sport is different. Maybe Major League Baseball now will change the policies like they have in the draft kiddie money, right? I mean, Theo is, if anything, he's rewriting the rule book. I mean, the Major League Baseball is reacting to what the
why he's a Hall of Famer
and changing things. He is a Hall of Famer.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he is, and John Lester is on the verge. But that's not the question right now.
Where does the Bulls getting the seventh pick leave
you in terms of expectations? I still expect them. If you want to believe that last year's number one pick, Wendell Carter Jr., really didn't have a season, okay? So they're getting kind of two first-round talents coming up this year. And based on where the East is right now today, I don't know where Anthony Davis is going, but I expect that he's either going to stay in New Orleans or he's going to end up on the Lakers. That's what I think is going to happen, because then all of a sudden New Orleans would have the number one overall pick and maybe the seventh overall pick in the upcoming draft, plus a player. So based on how the East is set up right now, that was the one thing Paxson pointed out, if you're trying to be glass half full, right? So Grizzlies play in the West. I don't know why, but they play in the West. The Suns, the West, the Lakers, the West, all Pelicans, the West. So all these teams, West, 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 West. And the Knicks can't do it with one guy, especially not just the number two guy. I just worry, like, we're talking about this North Carolina point guard. If Chris Dunn isn't better than that guy, then what a colossal mistake that was. I mean, this could be Chris Dunn all over again. If anything, you hope that somebody has a disgruntled or overpaid point guard somewhere else, and that's what the Bulls would do with that seventh pick, is trade for some type of a veteran rebuilding team's point guard. But I don't want to draft a point. I don't know that there's a point guard at that point that's going to be any better than Chris Dunn.
I think the only person that should answer those questions is him.
What was more impressive from Kyle Hendricks on Tuesday night, his work on the mound or his work at the plate? And where does the professor fit in the Cubs rotation?
I got to tell you, I really think that his work at the plate, I didn't see coming in any way. I mean, the idea that he drove in two runs and he got three knocks, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. I thought he'd have a good pitching performance. The guy is a real good pitcher, and you kind of come to expect it from him. And I know he started the season slow, and he pitched a great game, but he had as many hits himself as he allowed. So it was surreal to see that. I'm going to say I was more impressed just because I've seen him pitch well. Now, he pitched a great game, but I was more impressed with the fact that he got three hits, because I didn't expect it. I didn't see it coming, and he was driving the ball. I mean, he was really it was amusing in a way, but also a man helping his own cause. So more impressive for me was him at the plate, just because I've seen him pitch well before. Where does the professor fit in the Cubs rotation? I think right behind John Lester. I think you get to a playoff series, you can start with John Lester because of everything he's done in his career,
so,
and how
Hendricks
well
a
he's
Hall
doing.
Of Famer too, then,
and
like
then
Lester.
I got Hendricks going next, and then Cole Hamels and Q, and then you.
Yeah, I think that's a good spot to put him, right behind Lester. Lester certainly pitched like the ace that we expected him to be. John Lester, number one. Kyle Hendricks, number two. That's the way it should be. That's the way it's designed to be. even though you're paying Yu Darvish like a top of the rotation guy, he's not, and we'll see more of him today later. But definitely number two behind Lester, and I think Quintana fits in three, and Hamels, and then Darvish number five. Yesterday, Kyle Hendricks looked confident at the plate. He looked like he had a plan. He did drive the ball, and it reminded me of Little League, because in Little League, your pitcher was your best hitter, and the guy that was having three hits and holding the other team to three hits, and that's exactly what Kyle Hendricks did. So it was sort of a Little League effort with from a Major League pro, and this is a guy that came through for the Cubs, and that just has been so smooth. And his reactions are classic on the mound. He doesn't seem to lose focus. He's very poised. When Albert Almora made that catch to save that home run or extra base hit, to see Hendricks' response on the mound was classic Kyle Hendricks. So everything's rolling right now for him. It's nice to see, because he's a guy that started slow but certainly has gotten into rhythm now.
Even though the Reds can't hit this season so far, and the Cubs just crushed this team, 52-25 over the last five seasons, I have to go to Hendricks and his work on the mound, especially of late. Last three starts, Cincinnati last night, he goes 8+. Against Miami, he went 8. Against St. Louis, he had that 81-pitch shutout. 25 innings, one earned run, 17 strikeouts, and one walk. 17 Ks, one walk, his last three starts. The Cubs' rotation has been so good that after any game, you could say, wait, that's the best guy in the rotation. Nope. The way Q's rolling right now, no, he's the best guy. Wow, Hamels was excellent. Remember what he did at the end of last season. This season, so far, Hendricks is the best pitcher in the rotation. But it's different once you get to the playoffs. The way it would line up right now, I think you go Lester 1, Hendricks 2.
Yeah, I mean, no question about it. I think Hendricks, with his profile, his age compared to the rest of the guys in the rotation, I think that his reliability, he's not a guy that gets hurt very often. I mean, starting off the season where he was not we're used to seeing him, you know, struggle a little bit early in the season, that was a complete anomaly for Kyle Hendricks. Usually as steady as anybody, not even just within the Cubs rotation, but among starting pitchers in Major League Baseball, you pretty much know what you're going to get from him. Now, the run that he's on right now is even above what we're used to seeing from Kyle Hendricks. He's been absolutely fantastic, and maybe that's just balancing out how bad the start was there, and he's kind of finding his level. But I mean, he can swing the bat a little bit, but I'm not going to say it was more impressive that he drove a ball into the outfield. I mean,
I've never seen him do that. I've never seen him. Has he ever had three hits in a game?
I don't think so.
That was unbelievable. I've seen him pitch well.
I've seen him pitch well way more often than I have seen him hit well, which makes me think that it's much more impressive for him to be able to pitch well consistently. And we still need the DH in the National League, for the record.
There you go. Kevin and I finally agree on something. You still need the DH in all of across baseball. I will get on board with that. Kevin and I have been united. I'm also going to side with Kevin here. He has come around. I thought that contract and the consistent turnover of pitching coaches, and I almost bit on the fact that Wilson Contreras is not a good framer and a good receiver, and maybe that was what was wrong with Kyle Hendricks, or why Kyle wasn't being Kyle early on. But what he's done in the last couple of starts, unbelievable. Now, as far as where he sets up, you know, you got to answer me this. The way the Cubs are going, I think the Cubs would open every series at home right now. So that being said, because he's so unflappable, I would go Lester 1, and I would actually go Cole Hamels 2, just because Cole has been so unbelievable at Wrigley Field in his career. And not that Kyle hasn't been good, but not that good. And also just because he's so smooth.
Handsome.
No, well, yeah, Cole Hamels. No, you talk about somebody who's won the gene battle, right? I mean, the gene lottery. Boy, oh boy.
I don't quite get the question.
Are you concerned about Anthony Rizzo's back injury, or is it no big deal? And has the offense stalled a bit?
Who finished seventh in the gene lottery?
Well, I finished near the bottom. So okay. That's what I know.
Anthony Rizzo's back was exactly. Oh, wow.
I might have finished a bar of Gar. I have better hair.
Rizzo sat out again. That was a bit of a surprise. You didn't think his back would linger, but I don't think it's a big concern. He's got a pretty good replacement at first base in Chris Bryant. I got a kick out of Chris Bryant saying after the game, saying that they were kidding Rizzo about his WAR going down because he's a better replacement player. And Chris Bryant looks pretty natural at first base. So Anthony Rizzo's back is something that he has dealt with in the past, and he has come back from, you know, sore back or whatever, aggravated back or tight back, and then been the hitter that we expect him to be. So I don't think it's a big concern. The offense has stalled a little bit, but it has, you know, the reasons for that. The Brewers are the Brewers, and the Reds have actually pitched pretty well. So I think this is an offense that still shows good signs. It's not something that I would overreact to. They still are getting tremendous pitching, so they don't have to be as explosive as they were maybe earlier in the season. And you, the right guys are hitting, you know. And when you see Chris Bryant having three more hits, and he looks like the Chris Bryant that everybody remembers, and that's been a consistent look now for the last several weeks. That's encouraging. Javi Baez still going the other way. These guys, once Rizzo gets back, are going to be just fine, I think, offensively. So the Cubs are rolling right now. So I think that a little bit of Anthony Rizzo taking a couple days off to get his back right makes sense.
I would worry about any back injury. I think back injuries are scary. I think anyone who's ever had a back issue of any kind is afraid to get one again. It's a bear, and it's a bad thing. And he always is stretching. He's always trying to keep his back loose. He's clearly had some back problems. It's debilitating when you have that kind of an injury. So giving him a day off is great. Giving him a couple days off, he's still there. He's okay. You just don't want any kind of setback or any long-term thing. And that is always a problem when you talk about lower back problems. So here's hoping he's fine. Yeah, the offense has stalled a little bit. You know, they had the series against the Cardinals where they scored, 23 runs in three games? And I know one of them was a 13-run output, but that was just, you know, very impressive. And it slowed down a little bit. And they, you know, they were still good but not great against Miami. And then the Brew Crew, you didn't score as many runs. And obviously the Reds pitch okay, too, so you don't get overly worked up about it. But we talk about Kyle Hendricks. And again, just to remind Kevin in particular, the question was, what was more impressive from Kyle Hendricks on Tuesday night? It wasn't a body of work question.
Okay, well, but I still at any say rate, his pitching performance.
Okay, fair enough. You can say that, but you didn't say it when you answered the question. You talked about his career.
I like to cherry pick.
I should just cram it
with walnuts.
But I do think that the offense has stalled slightly when the pitcher has to bail himself out, but it's still more than good enough, and I expect them to continue to win games, and they'll be better when Rizzo does come back, which could be today, right?
If Rizzo does continue to have these back issues, maybe they won't be able to make him a Cub for life. But going against
Cincinnati, now's the best time to extend it.
Can you be a Cub for life when you've been in a couple of different organizations? Just out of curiosity.
Cub for the rest of
semantics.
Yeah. It wouldn't shock me if Rizzo ends up sitting the rest of the series.
Hall of Famer?
Going up against Cincinnati. Yeah, first base is very easy to get in the Hall of Fame as a first baseman. It is. And with Rizzo, I agree. You have to worry anytime there is a back issue, even though it's something he's dealt with throughout his career. But the offense has stalled a bit here. Look at the last six games. They've scored four runs or fewer, but the pitching has been so great. They go 5-1 during that stretch. Very difficult to do. With Rizzo dealing with the back, with the offense stalling, much of the lineup stalling a bit, there's Chris Bryant just on an insane tear right now. His 23-game on-base streak, 25 hits, 21 walks, hit by pitches a couple of times during that stretch. So Bryant has really carried the team offensively of late. Not time to worry, but boy, we'd probably be on a ledge if the pitching wasn't pitching up to this level.
But it is, so it doesn't matter that the offense.
You mean
is
if they weren't 25-14, Joe?
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, they've had the best rotation in baseball. What can you say? I mean, 1-4, because Yu Darvish is still Yu Darvish, but 1-4. You know, you put these guys up against anybody. So that makes it kind of irrelevant that the offense is stalled. It gives Rizzo a little bit more leeway if he needs to have some time off, maybe even a stint on the injured list if you need it, because the depth that they have on this roster lets you do that. I mean, Chris Bryant is such a natural. Like you said, you can put him in left, you can put him at third, you can put him at first base. He's going to be pretty much a plus defender anywhere you stick him. And Anthony Rizzo, and this might have gotten lost because the Cubs have complained about pretty much everything on the corner of the planet from the last few years or so. But Anthony Rizzo complaining about the beds in the hotels in Cincinnati last year, it might just be a Cincinnati thing. He's going to have to stay somewhere else or sleep on somebody's couch or something, because whatever is going on over there in the hotels, maybe it's the chili that he's having in Cincinnati. He's having some issues, and they always pop up when he's in Ohio.
Travel with an air mattress?
It couldn't hurt.
Maybe they could send him like a Casper.
There you go.
A box, right? Yeah. A Casper bed. And
great bed.
They a sponsor?
They were
at one point. I have one.
We're trying to bring him back now.
Yeah.
I could use a new mattress.
It's a great mattress.
I'd be happy to say I sleep on the same mattress. That
for your Anthony 2 hours of sleep that you get every night?
Hey, they better be the best 2 hours. They better be the best 2 hours ever.
There you go.
Okay. I think everything will be just fine. I joked around with Kevin in here, you know, trade Anthony Rizzo. That's the next thing. The offense hasn't looked great, but they're winning. Okay. He'll be fine. I think I would expect him back in the lineup today. I think Rizzo's the kind of guy that doesn't want to just hang around and watch this happen so that we don't have all this. There's got to be something to talk about, right? When the team's going this well, you got to find something to bitch and moan about. So I guess we're bitching and moaning about Anthony Rizzo's back today.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com.
Thank you, Dustin. With Manny Banuelos making an early exit with a shoulder injury, or was it embarrassment, what do the White Sox do now and where do they turn?
Well, it's interesting to talk about the White Sox and not to just complain that one of the Cubs players has missed two games with an injury. Sorry for bringing that up. Apparently, Dustin doesn't like when future Hall of Famers are criticized. Jay Hay going to the Hall of Fame too, Dustin? How many Hall of Famers?
They're all future Hall of Famers.
Manny Banuelos,
and future MVPs.
That's what I'm saying. They all are.
What?
Manny Banuelos is, it's not his fault, first of all, that he's not the starting pitcher that they
thought he could
be. It's
the juice balls in baseball, right? That's whose fault it is.
No, I'm saying to whom much is given, much is expected, and to who is putting a team together, it's your fault. You know, Erwin Santana, you sign him and you think he's going to be a starter. That's on you. You know, I don't know why the Sox came into a season as shorthanded as they are, and they were down a pitcher to begin with, and now they've got Manny Banuelos and Dylan Covey as starters, which is not ideal in any stretch of the imagination. And none of the pitchers at AAA, not named Dylan Cease, are pitching very well. So if you're going to bring someone up, you're going to bring up a guy that you don't want to bring up yet. It doesn't make sense. The rest of these guys all have, like, I think an 8.0 ERA or higher. There are some guys that are pitching well at Birmingham, but you don't really want to be bringing those guys up. They had a chance to get Gio Gonzalez in the offseason. They could have gotten Gio Gonzalez in the in-season, and they passed on him a couple times. That didn't make sense to me. I guess James Shields is out there. Hey, Dallas Keuchel's out there. You know, Patrick Corbin signed in free agency, but the Sox were going after Manny at the time. You come into a season with a weakness, and then that weakness becomes a major weakness. That's how life works. So they
Jerry really
started,
stepped up.
I can't blame Manny for not being the guy that they thought he could be, because I don't know why they thought he could be
why,
that guy.
Why would you expect anything out of Manny Banuelos?
That's what I'm saying. So
White
I'm not going to sit here and tear into him. But they obviously came into the season short.
To me, this is growing into as big of a concern or, I guess, a problem. Rick Hahn took a lot of heat for not signing Manny Machado.
Right.
And a lot of heat was deserved, and a lot of it was over the top. But the fact that this rotation was as left as shorthanded as it is, apparently, is as big of a problem to me, because this is a team. The White Sox are pretty competitive. They're more competitive at this stage of the season than I think maybe you expected them to be. But you look at their starting rotation, and there's no depth. What are you doing?
You can't put together winning streaks. It's really going to be a problem.
There's no momentum you can establish. I mean, Luplo yesterday hit two more home runs. I don't know. Banuelos, is it his arm? Is it his shoulder? Is there an injury? There better be, because he's throwing batting practice. So what do you do now? We laugh at James Shields. He at least eight innings.
I do not laugh at James Shields at all.
It's a professional pitcher that you don't have right now at the back end of your rotation that you need. Look, Kyle Kubat at Double A, I think, Birmingham, he had a streak of 37 scoreless innings end on Monday. That may be a little too fast for him to be at the major league level. You look at Carson Fulmer again? No, I don't think so. God. Seen enough of him. Oof. Why not Dylan Cease now? Is that rushing him? Is he not ready? I don't know if that's the case. They certainly know their prospects better than we know the prospects. But this is getting old because the Sox deserve better. The rest of the team deserves better than to have this sort of unprofessional effort every fifth day. When your fourth and fifth starters you can't trust. Your top three have been encouraging. And the rest of the team has overachieved to this point of the season. Give them something to play for. Give them a reason that they think they're going to be competitive on those days when Giolito, Lopez, and Nova aren't pitching.
Ben Wheeler's gave up three homers. The guy was leaving the game soon. It was embarrassment, probably. And it is shocking when you take a look at this Charlotte Knights roster. Outside of Covey, the pitchers they have, and Mully, you brought it up. They have five different guys that have started games that have ERAs of eight or higher. So you brought up the name James Shields. I have to agree. Everybody around that team, when he was in that clubhouse, would go on and on about how great he was for a young ball club. And for selfish reasons, call up to Jake Meister.
You know what? I'm so glad that everybody is starting to finally come back around to my point of view that they should have signed James Shields in the offseason again for organizational depth. He should have already been in Charlotte or in the major leagues, depending on where they needed him at this point. Now they need him in the starting rotation. Yes, he will eat innings. He threw 200 innings last season. There are not that many guys around that can throw 200 innings in a season anymore. And he's the butt of jokes. And yes, Fernando Tatis is in San Diego, and we can go through all that again. But he's out there. He's available. They know him. They know what you're going to get from him. You got to bring in James Shields. And by the way, Ross Detweiler, 33-year-old, last night at Charlotte that they just signed, had a very good start. Gave up one earned run in about six innings, I believe. So that'll be your next.
He's on the way, right?
Come on,
that
down,
means he's on the
Ross
way.
Detweiler.
They didn't sign him to leave him at Charlotte.
You're absolutely right. He will be up imminently.
I would say any of the guys in Charlotte that are doing what they're doing would be better than this. Why not let them have this major league experience? It really can't get any worse. And Mully, you're right to the point. It's not this guy's fault. I mean, he was brought here. He's been hurt. He hasn't been in the game for a long time. He doesn't have it. What's the situation with Carson Fulmer right now? I'm not paying. Is he?
He sucks.
They moved him to the bullpen.
They can't work him back into the rotation to finally.
Why would
see
you? I mean, he hasn't shown enough to say that.
It's another guy that's in.
It's another wasted draft pick.
Bring him up and let him have the. Isn't that what Ozzie said the other day? Like, let these guys experience this at the major league level instead of the minor league level. Why not? Just don't throw 100 pitches.
Because you're going to be down 8-0 in the second inning, and it's.
None of them have. There's not a guy other than Cease that deserves to be promoted, and they don't want to promote him. It's simple as that.
I mean, Carson Fulmer, you just can't anymore.
Is
you
the
cannot.
Cease thing that clock? Is that the clock issue? Is that what's going on with Cease?
I don't know what the issue is because at some point they're going to have just the development. They want to have him succeed more and dominate more at the AAA level before moving him up, but it might be time.
Are they interested in you, Darvish?
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.